Welcome back to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. And you heard just a few moments ago from Steve Kemp, who is the acting commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service. He was talking about the network's contract in response to a call for testimony from Ed Towns, who's the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. The hearing called Running Out of Time, Telecommunications Transition Delays, Wasting Millions of Federal Dollars, talking about how the network's contract is working, or in the case of Congressman Towns' view, not working. And in a few minutes, you'll hear from Sanjeev Bagwalia, who is the chief information officer at the Interior Department now, and is leaving that job, and he'll tell you actually shortly after the top of the hour when we hear from him where he's going and what he's doing and why that matters to the network's contract. My guest now, though, to talk about these contract vehicles, their size, and how well they work or don't work is Angela Stiles. She's a partner in Crowell & Moring's Government Contract Group and a former administrator for federal procurement policy at the Office of Management and Budget. Angela, welcome to the program. It's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Happy to do it. The gist of this hearing was that Congressman Towns expressly stated he doesn't believe networks is working the way that it should because of the size, because of the complexity of its implementation. He expressed some skepticism about how well the vendors were meeting some of the small business and minority-owned business requirements. There seem to be a lot of moving parts to these kinds of contract vehicles. And I'm curious to know if you think the congressman's skepticism is well-placed, or if that's just the nature of the beast when it comes to contract vehicles of this size.
I think it's very much the nature of the beast, and I don't think anybody should be surprised that a project of this size, which is going to be, telecommunications and other IT-type services for the entire U.S. federal government, wouldn't be very, very complicated to implement. It's larger than any private sector company, and the implementation is such a company. So I don't think anybody should be surprised by it being complicated and hard and taking a lot of time.
What is the thing that maybe either OMB or GSA or other procurement acquisition people in the government can be doing on these big things to explain to Congress the complexity that's involved, to maybe kind of be a preemptive strike against hearings like this? Or is that, again, kind of the nature of the oversight beast?
Well, it may be a little bit of the nature of it, but, you know, a lot of it has to do with what's sold to Congress in terms of what can be done and what the cost savings will be and how easy it'll be to do it. I mean, the federal agencies are, you know, somewhat balkanized, if you will. You know, in any contract of this size, you're forcing some of the agencies to participate. And they may not want to, and that's really what you're seeing with a networks-type issue, is that there were a lot of agencies that didn't want to go along with this in the first place, and so they waited and they waited and they waited. They didn't put together, you know, information on what the systems were that they already had, didn't work hard on, you know, the pre-planning in terms of what they wanted to purchase. And because of that, it's slowed up significantly, but it's that balkanization and the agencies and many of them wanting to do whatever they want to do. They may not want to do this at all, and so they just put off the decision making.
Is there a person or an organization that should be responsible for maybe that pre-negotiation before something like networks goes live to make sure that the people that are supposed to be on board are on board?
Well, I think there certainly are efforts and attempts to do so. I think there have been attempts to do so at OMB. I know that there's an interagency council for it right now. And sometimes even your best efforts to try to get them to work together, there may be agencies and there may be big agencies that for one reason or another don't think that it's the best deal for them or don't want to participate in it. And so instead of just fighting it outright at the beginning, we'll just wait because they know that they can delay it and maybe never have to do it because they've delayed it.
Are those legitimate concerns, do you think, though, or are those kind of just perpetuations of fiefdoms?
I think a good deal of it is perpetuation of fiefdoms. Some of it, though, are tensions that are created by things like at the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense appropriators on the Hill really don't want the Department of Defense paying for services at GSA. you know, they don't want part of the appropriations from DOD going to performing some contract that GSA is administering. So some of it is more than just a fiefdom in terms of the department itself. Some of it, I think, is exacerbated by appropriators on the Hill, too.
Mm-hmm. And I think if anybody in the, at the agencies agrees on anything, it's that the appropriators, once they decide on something, it's really, really hard to change their minds to get them to go a different way, no matter how much cost savings or advantages you can demonstrate.
I think that's right. And, you know, and they may not simply believe that there are going to be those cost savings, and so they'll fight back against it, putting the departments in a very difficult position.
When we step back and look at these kinds of contracts, the networks of the world, structurally, what is involved there that the next, I mean, there's going to be another one. There's going to be some vehicle that comes along at some point in the future. What are the things that we should be looking at and thinking about to make sure that as we move forward, we can at least try to smooth over some of these edges so that the Mr. Kemps of the world and the Mr. Bhagwalias of the world can maybe try to avoid these kinds of what's taking so long type hearings?
Well, I think a big part of it is understanding each of the individual agencies' needs before a definitive vehicle is determined. You know, to make sure that you have the right options available for those agencies, because there can be legitimate differences in how the agencies operate. I mean, the Department of Defense is nothing like the Department of Interior, and while you might think that a networks contract would fit both of them, they might not. And so those legitimate differences in how they're operating and how they're going to operate going forward really need to be closely examined before a decision is made in terms of this is one contract vehicle and we're one government. So I think you really have to delve into what are the differences, you know, and how do we make sure that the solution going forward that we're choosing is going to meet the needs of all the agencies. And sometimes you can't. I mean, sometimes the theory that we can get cost savings because we're one big government doesn't actually work in practice.
Okay, I want to follow up on that, and then I also want to follow up on the takes two to tango theory, which is you in a vendor-government relationship, the vendor's in there too, and I want to maybe explore this a little bit from the vendor perspective with you when we come back, if we can do that. Angela Stiles is my guest, a partner at Crowell and Mooring, and a former OMB official, and you can find out more about her at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Find out more about this hearing that we're discussing about networks at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll continue in a moment.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
A study funded by the National Institutes of Health using an electroencephalogram, a machine that records the brain's electrical activity, shows newborn infants are capable of a simple form of learning while they're asleep. The finding may one day lead to a test that can identify infants at risk for developmental disorders. The NIH National Institute of Child Health and Human Development sponsors research on development before and after birth. The machine measured the baby's brain's electrical activity while a video camera recorded each baby's facial expressions as researchers played a tone while a machine blew a puff of air at each sleeping infant's eyelids. The electroencephalogram detected changes in brainwave activity that occurred simultaneously with the tone, showing the infants had learned to associate the tone with the puff of air.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
The Intelligence and National Security Report is brought to you by Mantech International Corporation.
Mantech has been providing IT services and solutions to the Air Force for more than 25 years, and they intend to deliver innovative and worldwide support to the upcoming NetSense 2 contract. They provide a full spectrum of net-centric services, including service-oriented architecture enterprise solutions, web service development, cybersecurity, network operations, and sustainment support. Mantech has been named one of the top 100 IT companies in the world by Business Week magazine.
Due to the high demand for Mantech's skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. Apply for openings today at Mantech.com. That's Mantech.com. Mantech, leading the convergence of national security and technology.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Isn't it time for a government technology event that gives you 21st century IT solutions? Join us at Gov 2.0 Expo, May 25th through May 27th at the Washington Convention Center for 3 days of incisive keynote speakers, in-depth training sessions, and networking with the brightest minds in the government IT sector. Gov 2.0 Expo, the training event for the future of government computing. Expo hall passes are free for all government employees. Register today at gov2expo.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Earlier this hour, you heard the chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, Adolphus Towns, say at a hearing on the networks contract that one of the advantages to contracts like networks is the leveraged buying power of the federal government getting better deals. My guest is Angela Stiles, partner in Crowell and Moorings Government Contracts Group and former administrator for federal procurement policy. And Angela, before the break, you mentioned that that's not always the case. Why is that not the case? It seems what Congressman Town says is pretty logical. The government buys a lot of stuff and should get a terrific price for it.
Well, yes, but I think what each agency buys can often be very different. And, you know, there are a lot of assumptions about the price and the cost savings that can be achieved that I think are somewhat overstated. I think you kind of have to realistically look at it, and just because you're the largest buyer doesn't mean it's not very complicated and a costly way to buy when you have to modify a particular contract vehicle to fit each particular agency's needs.
One of the other things that we talked about in the first segment is the idea that this is a two-way street, that there, in any vendor-government relationship, there's the vendor as well. And Congressman Towns had five representatives, somebody from each of the vendors that's on the networks contract at this hearing, talking about what their role is in keeping the contract moving on time. What is it specifically that the vendors maybe could be doing to let both the agencies know and the Congress know as the overseers that they're doing what they can to keep this contract on where it should be?
Well, I think what a lot of people don't like to admit is the fact that all of the expertise in these more complex areas are really with the vendors. The expertise is not really any longer in the government. So the government really has to go to, you know, this sector of vendors, whatever the procurement might be, to understand what they have and how they should buy a solution going forward. And I think that's what makes it difficult. And I think that's something that no one ever wants to admit at the hearing, is that it's not the government people with the expertise. It really is the industry people that understand what's happening, how it's being managed, and how the particular operation is going. I mean, a lot of times I think the better knowledge ends up being with the industry people.
Do you think that's good or bad? And if so, how should it change?
Well, I think you always need people in the government that are able to understand what they have, what they're buying, and how to manage what they're buying. And I think even in this particular procurement, you end up with people that probably aren't sophisticated enough to know where there might have been some pitfalls in the procurement.
We've heard Martha Johnson, the GSA administrator, talking about collaboration. She just did it today at the Management of Change Conference in Philadelphia. You can find out more about that at federalnewsradio.com. But she's been talking about collaboration between the vendor community and government ever since the first day she took office. What do you think the limit is? Where is that balance between good collaboration between the vendors and government and where you cross the line into the gray area that nobody really wants to see the agencies get into?
Well, I think it's really hard these days. I mean, there's so much focus on organizational conflicts of interest and personal conflicts of interest that it makes the collaboration between the government and agencies very, very difficult. Most government agencies are pretty standoffish these days towards the private sector, which I think is going to make these kind of procurements even harder They're going to make it even worse. They're going to make the commitments that can't be met even worse because, you know, there's not really a good level of cooperation and collaboration at this point in time on complex procurements between the government and industry.
All right. Long-term, you've seen a number of these kinds of oversight hearings come and go. Long-term, what should we be watching for now that we know that this is on Congressman Towns' radar screen? I'm sure there's somebody on the Senate side that is paying close attention to this as well. What are the benchmarks that we should expect to see or if we see should raise a red flag or anything like that in the coming, say, 6 months to a year about how networks is working?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a question. There wasn't anybody from OMB at the hearing. And really, you know, OMB is the one that carries the hammer around because they have the budget. And, you know, if you start seeing budget consequences for not implementing networks, that will make a real difference. And if you see, and I think some of the chairman's comments were directed towards OMB not being there and that they're really the force behind this coordination, and I think they are. And that's really what you should watch for. Is this something that they're going to engage in? Are they going to enforce this, or is this going to be left to a less effective, interagency management council?